This is Marketplace Money from APM. I'm Barbara Bogave. One last word, or I should say one last stanza on taxes this hour. We asked you to write in with your poems about taxes. And as always, you did not disappoint. We received more than we can share, at least on the show today. Poet Douglas Kearney has gamely agreed to join me to review your versifying. Doug is a professor of writing and critical studies at California Institute of the Arts, and it's so nice to have you on the show.
Thank you very much. I'm so happy to be here at the ground floor of this emergent genre
of poetry. Of IRS
this
poetry.
Here we are.
The literary world waits with
a
bated breath. Well, before we do get to our poems, I would like to know, how would you approach the assignment of writing a poem about taxes?
I mean, you know, on one level, the idea of taxes can just be sort of metaphorized as the idea of debt, of any kind of debt or repaying what you owe.
Which is a very fertile ground.
I mean, it's been a territory that poetry has explored for forever.
What is the artistic precedent here? You know, are there well-turned phrases, lines about taxes from famous works of poetry?
Well, you know, it was something I began thinking about, and I have to admit that what kept running into my head ahead of poetry were lines from hip-hop songs about taxes.
Oh, lay it on us. Great.
Well, there's Ice Cube's Bird in the Hand where he says, now I pay taxes, that you'll never get me back. What about diapers and bottles and Similac? This kind of sociocultural critique. Then there's also an MC from the Bay Area called Lyrics Born, who has a song called Stop Complaining, where he has this little riff about taxes. He says, this is fiscal harassment. They keep fondling my assets, you know, that kind of thing.
And, it's a good one. The rhyme.
The rhyme. It's built in, you know, he's staying within the field of his metaphor, extending it, building what one might call a conceit.
Well, let's see now what passion taxes inspired in our Marketplace Money listeners.
Oh, fantastic.
And we did receive a lot of poetry from all of you. Thank you so much. This one's from Kelly McIntosh of Traverse City, Michigan.
My father was an accountant. Working numbers was his trade. After years of helping him do my taxes, a tax preparer I was made. Now, without his assistance in juggling schedules A to D, I realize the knowledge he so kindly passed to me. Though filling out the tax forms isn't the most fun I've ever had, each April at tax time, I can enjoy fond memories of my dad.
Oh, Kelly also had this to say about the inspiration for the poem.
Well, I think I'm the only one I know who doesn't freak out at tax time. And it's just because my dad set up the system for me. It was something that we enjoyed doing together. And my first W-2s were when I graduated from nursing school, so I was 21. And he was teasing me because that first year I had four W-2s because I went from job to job to job. My tax forms have expanded as the years have gone by, but it's just always been an enjoyable thing because of how he introduced me to it.
Oh, so much meaning and history for her in tax forms.
Absolutely. Well, I mean, the complexity of that relationship right there between, not the relationship between Kelly and her father, but the relationship between taxes and fondness, a kind of a memory for that. That the filling out of the taxes becomes a site where we are able to re-engage a family memory and kind of feel that sort of connection. I mean, what makes it an interesting poem beyond just a personal poem, right? Beyond just this personal memory, is this idea I was kind of joking about earlier in terms of like rent and shared space and shared responsibility, right? The taxes actually links us in a larger way because it's the time where we're able to help each other in ways that we can't always see. And that also goes back to that thing I'm always talking about with debt, what we owe. There's a poem by Robert Hayden called Those Winter Sundays, where he's talking about his father doing all these things for him. And there's this really beautiful line at the end where he says, what did I know of love's lonely and austere offices, I think is how it goes. And here we have this moment where the appreciation for that is actually celebrated. And Kelly is able to know that. It's a surprise in this poem. poems are great for surprises. That's a beautiful thing.
And maybe not so much a surprise that dads come up in these poems about taxes. And we do have another poem now inspired by a male family member. And this is from Rob Jackson of Durham, North Carolina.
This poem is called Taxes. He led a revolution once. We all dream of it. There you are, standing in the back of a Jeep like Fidel, waving to people on a crowded street. You circle a post office each April 15th, honking the horn at your comrades in line, smiling and brandishing a Cohiba, blowing fat smoke rings to show them how easy it is, how little you're paying, how zero can be enough. It took years for the phone to ring with the call he dreaded, the sniper shot that left him slumped in his chair. He hung up, called a son-in-law, an accountant, and ended his resistance with payments, penalties, and pain. Most revolutions end this way. He knew that. It must have felt good for a time, though, this thrill of not paying. For a decade, he was Che. For a decade, my grandfather was king.
And here's some more reminiscences from Rob Jackson about his grandfather.
The most important thing is that this poem about my grandfather is true. He really did stop paying his taxes for about a decade. Did it start with being late one year and realizing that no one came and knocked on your door and go from there? Or was it a conscious act of rebellion? I honestly don't know. He really did come to dread the telephone ringing. The line about the sniper shot and him slumping in his chair, that is the way it happened. He was in the kitchen, I believe. I wasn't there, but my grandmother was, and this call came in, and he just slumped back in his chair, and I think she knew what had happened. His body language said what had happened. The penalties and punishment were financial. I mean, he was quite old. He never went to jail or anything like that. But the penalties, the financial penalties, were quite severe. The government doesn't let you off easily. My grandfather had a strong personality, and he did something that we all think about, that we all dream of. And obviously, society can't operate if everyone does that. But, I have a small part of me admires him for it, even at the same time that I know it's not a viable option.
Here's the celebration of the kind of outlaw, which is a huge part of, U.S. culture, like the person who goes against what you're supposed to do. And yet, it's not just a pure sort of celebration. There is the sense that eventually, you're going to have to pay the piper, right? The tax man does cometh. And eventually that call will be there. So the anxiety, right after we get the first stanza, which is so much of this kind of bravado, standing there on the back of the truck with the cigar. And then suddenly we move into this that public space, and suddenly we move into the private space of, oh, my God, I hope they are not about to call me. Every time the phone rings, it could be that call. It could be every time the door slams shut, it could be that gunshot, the sniper shot. So that anxiety that we get to see on the other side of this kind of celebration, it's just that detail that gives the poem its tension. That's so funny. But the irony, of course, is that eventually he will pay, and the payment will be even greater in this moment in many ways than it would have been setting up.
That's a great story. I have to admit, my father also waged a protest against the IRS and would not pay his city tax, and stamped his city taxes with a special stamp that he had ordered that I can't say.
I was
on
about
the
to
radio.
Say
it. It begins with
the public radio now.
Word bull.
yeah.
And there's a longer story there. Another poem, and of a very different sort. This is from listener Cyrus Khan, and he sent this to marketplacemoney.org.
Alas, 'tis the time to file my tax. Let's see if I can deduct the max. The IRS, I'm sure, is twiddling their thumbs. Maybe this time I'll throw them a few crumbs. Should I file myself or use the pros? With each passing minute, my anxiety grows. Hours on end I work for Uncle Sam. Sometimes it feels like one big scam. It's time to bid farewell to all my money. Won't have a penny to take out my honey. I should fear not, be happy and stand tall. Maybe I'll get a check to party at the mall. No use huffing and puffing day in and day out. Everyone pays no matter what their clout. Sigh, for taxes are here forever to stay. Toil away, pay your share, and just move on, I say.
Time-honored couplets. What do you think of Cyrus's poem?
Well, it is definitely lodging itself into a tradition. That aspect of the poem gives it a kind of gravity at the same time that it steals that gravity right out from under because of the lowly subject matter. Moving from alas to deduct the max as a kind of shift from this.
I appreciated that.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, toil away.
Yeah, you know, we have these diction shifts that I think are really quite fascinating. But in the end, you know, all of the kind of gravity of the poem is dismissed by toil away, pay your share, and just move on, I say. The poem is constantly moving between those poles, right?
And very relatable.
Absolutely.
I relate to almost every line of this poem. well, our next entry is from Linda Mitchell, and she is in Kansas City, Missouri, and this is called A Sonnet for Tax Time.
In this, the anxious time of year, when taxes loom before our eyes, I sit with marketplace in my ears and ponder payments as advised. But hark, my notebook within which my logged expenses I do pen doth now provide the needed stitch that saves my time no matter when I do my taxes, logged into computer programs made to bring me peace of mind and refunds too. In hour's mirror, tax done, I sing. The lesson here I hereby teach with records clear. You won't overreach.
It is no small thing to write a sonnet. So
no,
first,
no, absolutely,
you get
absolutely.
Big kudos for that.
We have a sonnet,
Linda
Mitchell. I mean, this is the thing. Like, everybody thinks of sonnets as love poems, but really they're poems about arguments, actually, like philosophical arguments.
Yes,
and that's what
right.
that final
Voices.
Couplet does,
mm-hmm.
right? It reverses what you thought the argument was going to be about. And so here, you know, the lesson here I hereby teach, with records clear, you won't overreach. Here we have what comes in and seals the rest of the poem, you know, in this sort of moment of celebration of the ability to pay one's taxes because of the care that one has been taken in preparing them. And I also, you know, notice the somewhat opportunistic self shout out to Marketplace.
I was wondering if you were going to go there.
You know, I'm just saying, is that what you have to do? To get on, to get your poem
Hardly.
On Marketplace.
I was wondering if having Marketplace in her ears contributes to the anxious time of year or detracts from it. Could go either way.
It could. Yeah. That's the flexibility of the sonnet, isn't it? As a form. But
this has a very nice movement and grace to the language, I
it
think.
It does.
Actually.
It does. And if you will forgive me one super geeky poetry term, it just one. It's called enjambment, right? And it means
nice.
That a line doesn't stop on its end. And I know listeners can't see
Flow.
The poem, but the line, that saves my time no matter when, doesn't go, that saves my time no matter when. Bump, I do my taxes. It goes, that saves my time no matter when I do my taxes.
And my notebook within which my logged expenses I do pen.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. And so that flow suggests a kind of speed. Suddenly the poem accelerates at that moment.
And ease. Despite the anxiety.
Fluidity.
Finally, we have Barbara Bowles, who so loved this Marketplace Money Challenge that she wrote not one, but three poems.
She overpaid.
That's right.
She totally overpaid.
She couldn't stop. Here's just one of them.
Taxicity. We live in a state of taxicity, acquiescent to our complicity. Torture, rape, and bombs, violence that numbs, nostalgic for unknown simplicity.
I have to say, I appreciate that rhyme, praxis with fractious.
Oh, yeah. Taxicity. So we have that fun play, the poison of taxing, right?
Oh,
taxicity
yes.
becomes toxicity.
Well, so much she's packed into these five lines.
Oh, yeah. The poet Tracy K. Smith, who just won the Pulitzer Prize last year for Life on Mars, talks about how we are all complicit in our comfort. You know, here with all the activities that our nation does. And here, you know, Barbara just draws that direct line with our taxes make us complicit.
Right. And a real call to awareness of what you're really doing.
Absolutely.
When you're sitting there. You're not just getting depressed about
absolutely.
Your dwindling
no,
account.
You know, as much as you're fixing roads and, you know, torture, rape and bombs. That's what your taxes do.
Doug Kearney is a poet and a professor of writing and critical studies at California Institute of the Arts. And thanks a lot for playing along with us today.
Thank you. I had fun.